Okay, for the benefit of the tape, I've been speaking for about 6 hours. They've missed everything. we only missed a couple of minutes. I'm talking about step five. I was talking about what a privilege it is to do that. So I was saying, the benefits of doing it. No one should be afraid of doing a step five. It is a wonderful, privileged moment in life. And it has to be done. So anyway, the Big Book was written at a time when there were only approximately 100, was published at a time when there were only approximately 100 people in AA, in New York, Cleveland, and Akron, Ohio. They give directions for finding a person to give a step five to, because of course there were this was meant to be read anywhere in the world, and there would be no one from AA. And they talk about going to, if you belong to an established religion, you might do it to a minister or a priest, maybe a psychologist or a doctor, even a friend or a member of the family, but do not share with them the issues that would hurt them. The rule, they say, is that we must be hard on ourselves but always considerate of others. And they say you can only postpone it if you can honestly say there's absolutely no one you can do it with. And I know there are people you can do it with. There always are. And then they give the criteria for what constitutes the right person to give a step five to. And this is found on page 74 at the bottom, or page 89, paragraph 2. Just the end of that paragraph. It is important that he be able to keep a confidence, that he fully understand and approve what we're driving at, that he will not try to change our plans. But we must not use this as an excuse to postpone. And I've heard a lot of step fives. As a lawyer, you know, I know how to keep confidences. I once had a person do a step five with me, and she gave me $1. And she said, "You're my lawyer now, you must keep my confidence." She also said towards the end, "You realize that by the time we finish, I will have to kill you." No, she didn't, but anyway. And then on page 75, or page 89 of the Danish edition, paragraph 3, "When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand." And I always do this, whether I give away the step 5 or whether I listen to one. I always say to the person I'm giving it to, "I am about to tell you things that are going to save my life. I want to tell you things about myself so that I can get rid of them. This is life or death with me. Thank you for doing this." And if people are doing this for the first time, I will ask them to explain why they're doing this and why it is important. Because it is a moment in time when we are actually opening ourselves up to another human being. It's amazing. Now, the instructions, the particular instructions for doing them, are found in one sentence, page 75, or page 89 of the Danish version, paragraph 4. "We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past." Cranny, people know what that means? It's a kind of a little area inside a cave or something where you could just maybe put your hand. And those are the instructions. So I'm going to give you my own experience and my own suggestions. These are not Big Book suggestions, and I have discussions with many other people who think I'm absolutely wrong. But in my experience, it works very well. If you take the resentment form, if they take the resentment form and they read off column 1 and column 4. Column 4 is selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And column 1 is the person, institution, or principle. And I don't ask them to read to me from column 2, which are why those things, the long list of venting, or column 3, how it affects them. Because as far as I'm concerned, we're illuminating their defects of character, not the defects of character of other people, or not going, allowing them to go into a very long story. I have found that to work. I sometimes have to say, "This James person, is he your brother, your husband, or your child?" You know, because that's important to know. But I don't ask them to tell me the whole story. Remember that when we folded over the resentment form, we blocked off column 2 and we put out of our minds the wrongs others had done, and we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. So it's not as if the selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fear is related to the things in column two. It's related to the person or the institution of the principal. So I want to get that dynamic in place. So that's what I do. I have a good friend who works the steps very beautifully and who disagrees and thinks that they should read off column two and three. I'm just giving you my own experience. So they will say, and here's James, he's my brother, and I've been selfish and I wanted him to be a person other than who he is, dishonest, he is who he is and I can't change him, you know, self-seeking, I thought I could change him and frightened that he's going to remain sick. You know, bang. I mean, that's sometimes all I hear. And that's sometimes, and that's a whole story, of course. That's an incredible amount of history that this person might have with his or her brother. And yet, that's it in a nutshell, those four clear sentences. But they know what they're talking about, and I understand it. And it makes sense to me. And of course, as they speak, they become patterns. And I'm able to say, do you realize, I don't know if you know it, but I certainly heard the same words that you used to discuss so-and-so to talk about two other people. Is this a pattern? And they begin to see if it is a pattern. I'm not saying it is a pattern, but it might be one. So they begin to see the patterns in their lives. There are very few differences. You know, there may be three or four patterns that I begin to see once people do this. Now, the upside, the good part about doing it this way is, of course, it's much shorter. The downside is, the bad part is, you get to hear none of the interesting things. You know, I will never forget a woman who talked about her husband, and she said, and then there was that thing about the videotaping, but I don't want to talk about that because I want to talk about where I've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking. I thought, videotaping? And I started to imagine what she would, I mean, there must have been a whole story about that, and I never learned it, and I never wanted to, well, I did want to learn it, but I never, but you know, I mean, we're all voyeurs, you know, we all sort of, why else would all these celebrity magazines exist if we didn't want to know about the private lives of other people? But that's really none of my business. And so I didn't hear her story about what he did to her. I assume he did something to her, but I heard her story of how she harmed him. And that was more important to her, much more important. I've once heard a step five where a person said, well, before I tell you about how I've harmed my girlfriend, let me tell you about what she did to me. We were in a movie theater, and I said, wait a minute. You know, you have to have put out of your minds the wrongs others have done. You know, and go back and do a little bit of thinking, because you clearly haven't figured it out. You haven't been able to put that away. And if you can't put that away, how can you talk about where you've been harmed? So that's the resentment form. And we go through it. And this the most resentments I've ever heard were about 180. You know, 60 pages, three to a page. And it took maybe an hour and a half. Because after about the 50th or 60th, they were all the same. And the person was able to say, well, the next four are exactly the same. They're my, you know, my two sisters, my brother, the same as my first brother. You know, then my boyfriend, the same as all these six other boyfriends. You know, and so it got pretty quick. With the fear form, I say to them, just to save time, I'm going to assume that you relied on your finite self and not infinite God. I'm going to assume that it didn't work, and I'm going to assume that you said the fear prayer. So let's go through, name your fear, tell me why you have that fear, and tell me what you think God would have you be. If you remember the forms. And often, for first-time people, they don't know what God would have them be. They don't understand. So I work with them and give them suggestions from my own experience as to what I might think if I had the same kind of fears. Of course, often I have had those same kind of fears because they're very similar fears. The big book, not the big book, the AA 12 and 12 says there are two kinds of fears. Fear of losing something you have and fear of not getting something you want. And Joe and Charlie add a third fear of being found out, which is really losing something you have or not getting what you want. But it's an interesting thing to say. So there are some basic fears, but what God would have you be is not always easy. It is for me. I've been doing this for so many years, but the first time I did it, it wasn't that easy. What is it that God would have me be? A person who what? And normally, it's a person who has some faith, who understands his limitations, who does what he can and accepts that he can't do any more. I mean, that's usually what it is in a very general sense. That doesn't take too long. And then the sex conduct, I asked them to actually read almost the whole form, but asked them to name the person, where they've been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate, whether they aroused jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness, and where did they go wrong, what should they have done instead. And sometimes I can help them with my own experience. And that's it. Except the big book gives you some promises. And as I said before, and they're listed in one of the forms you have, the promise after those steps which have promises. There aren't many. But this is the first step that has big, big promises. And I remember the first time I did my step five using these forms and using this method, when I did it with the person I told you about on Friday, who had been in AA for many years and really, really, really read the big book. He looked at page 75 or the middle paragraph right after we pocket our pride and go to it, which is page 89 of the Danish edition, paragraph 4. He said, okay, it says this: once we have taken the step withholding nothing, we are delighted. Are you delighted? We can look the world in the eye. Can you look the world in the eye? We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Can you be alone at perfect peace and ease? Our fears fall from us. Have your fears fallen from you? The rest of these are beginning. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often, obviously not always, come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. So there are four definite promises. We are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears have fallen from us. So this man said to me, are these true for you? I said, I don't know if they're true for me. I don't think I've ever done a more powerful step five. But I feel really good, but I don't know whether these are true for me. I'll phone you tomorrow and tell you. So I phoned him the next day, and I said, no, I can't say that these are all true for me. I feel good, but I certainly don't feel delighted. And, you know, he said, well, you left something out in step four. I said, I did everything in step four. No, you left something out. Go back and start writing. And I remember writing, I don't remember what I wrote, but I wrote something, because this is over 20 years ago. I wrote something, and then I began to write a whole bunch of other things. I must have had another 5 pages of resentments, which led into some fears. I might have remembered another sex conduct issue. I don't know if I did or not. And I had a smaller pack of things. And I went to see him and I did another step five with him. Within a week of doing my original step five. And I shared with him and I felt really good. And he said, okay, are you delighted? Can you look the world in the eye? Can you be alone in perfect peace and ease? Have your fears fallen from you? I don't know, I said. I feel even better than I did the first time. I'll phone you tomorrow. I phone him the next day. And you know what? I said, I don't feel those promises. Do some more. Oh, God. So I did it again, and I started to write, and again I had at least a few more resentments. So I did another step five with him, and he asked me again, are you delighted? Can you look the world in the eye? Can you be alone in perfect peace? And I said, no. At this time I was angry. He said, go back and do another one. So I might even have written down on my fourth one, I'm so angry that I have to do another step four. I don't know, but whatever it is, I did those things. And finally, the fourth time I did a step five with him, all within the space of about a month, I finished. I said, I am delighted. I can look the world in the eye. I can be alone in perfect peace and ease. My fears have fallen from me. And I was floating. I mean, I'd never felt like that. It was one of the great experiences of my life. So this checklist is such a powerful thing. Don't feel bad if your first time you do your step five, you don't feel these promises. You miss something. And it's like peeling the onion layers, you know, there's always a bit more. But believe me, it gets smaller and smaller, and thus, that is why you should really hurry through with step four. You'll find out whether you finished in step five, at this part of step five. Because if you don't feel these feelings of being delighted, looking the world in the eye, etc., there's a bit more to be done. Big deal. If you waited a month, you still wouldn't have found those things, because you probably had to get rid of the things first in order to find the other things that were below the surface. Does that make sense to you? So really and truly, it's a wonderful experience, and these promises do come true as you work them. But that's why you should not delay in your step four. Just get it done. Write down as much as you can think of. Answer as much as you can. Make your appointment. Sometimes it is really valuable to make the appointment for step five before you've started your step four. And that way you have the pressure to finish it. You may have to stay up all night, because if you're like most of us, you won't start until a week before, or, you know, a couple days before the appointment. But it really is worth it. So I would suggest to people that they make their appointments for step five even before, when they finish step three and they pick the person they want to hear their step five, they make the appointment, and then they work backwards from that in terms of how they're doing their step four. You'll find, as using this checklist, these four promises, that you've missed nothing. If it doesn't happen the first time, it'll happen the second. If it doesn't happen the second, it'll happen the third. And on like that. So it's really, really valuable. Just a thing about picking the person. As you may gather, I haven't made it all that clear. I sponsor both men and women. I've never had a problem with that. If I had to just sponsor men, I would have so few people to sponsor in this program. And my sponsees sponsor both men and women, regardless of their gender. But that's because of the way that we sponsor. And I'll talk about that when I get to step 12. We're not friends. We don't have daily contact with our sponsees. We don't have sort of this father-daughter, I don't know what you call it, relationship. It's really a very business-like relationship, and because of that, you know, it can be kept. The gender issue isn't that significant. There's no, you know. Anyway, there are times when I don't want to do a step five with a woman. You know, I talk about sexual issues, and I feel I'm an old school kind of person. Growing up in Canada, not in Denmark, and I sometimes feel a little embarrassed talking about some things. Sometimes I don't, and sometimes I do. I guess it depends on the things I talk about. And I can well imagine, and it is the fact, that there are certainly women in Canada who wouldn't feel comfortable talking to a man about sexual issues. Usually it's sexual issues, but it's not necessarily. And I certainly don't say to people, my sponsees, you must share with me. Find someone else. And I suggest people within the program. My own experience is finding is that with people in the program, I feel more comfortable. I feel as if they understand me better. Than I've done step fives with people in AA, and they were powerful, but I just didn't get that same sense of identification. But I don't think it matters at all. If you go to a priest, if you go to a minister, if you go to a psychologist, I don't think it matters at all, as long as you are as honest with them as you could be with me, or with any member of OA. Okay, so you've admitted to yourself in step four, you've admitted to another human being, and you've got this checklist of promises here. Once this checklist of promises comes true, you have another little bit of step five to do, because you haven't yet admitted to God. And on page 75, the last paragraph is the last part of step five. It's page 90, paragraph 1 of the Danish edition. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. So we're reviewing everything we've written down, all of step 4, thinking about it. And by the way, I would take a pen with me to my step 5, and I'd write some things in, any insights I get from the discussion. And I review it all. I just look through it all and see if it's complete. And then there's a prayer. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. God, thank you from the bottom of my heart that I know you better. And there are some of you maybe saying, Lori, you don't have a God. How can you thank God from the bottom of your heart that you know Him better? And my only answer is, I don't say I know Him better. I say it. I am thankful to the concepts of truth, love, justice, and beauty that I know them better. I understand what truth, love, justice, and beauty are closer, because I can look the world in the eye. I am delighted. I can be alone in perfect peace in these, and my fears have fallen from me. I have gotten rid of so much that I can now contemplate truth, love, justice, and beauty much more deeply. So that's how I see it. And I also do it because I'm told to do it. So, and it works. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, and we look at the 12 steps, the first five, and we ask if we have omitted anything. God, have I omitted anything? For we're building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. This arch, by the way, is an image that began earlier on in the book, and one of the handouts you have gives you the passages of of where that arch. It's an arch where you walk through with freedom, and as you, different steps are the cornerstones. There's the cornerstone of the step. There's the foundation of an arch. All of these images that ultimately it's an arch through which you pass to walk a free man, free person. So you think, am I complete? Have I finished? Now, if you haven't finished, you should immediately take steps to talk to the person you've done step five with to do more, either to meet with that person or maybe over the phone if it's not a huge thing. The people on tape have now missed, because the battery was gone, about another 3 hours of discussion, but not much. It's just about 1 minute. So that's why 6 and 7 were all together. It was this concept of, you know, you've done your step five. Are you ready? Fine. Ask God to do it. There's moments in time where you're saying, okay, I'm ready to go on. And then I'm going to do the prayer that starts me on my path. And that's all 6 and 7 are from the perspective of the big book. At least that's how I read it, and I think I'm right. But you can disagree with me. I don't mind, but that's how I see it. It's because of the influence of the 12 and 12s, which give us, you know, the same number of pages for each step, that we have thought that it takes more time. But remember, there were only 6 steps to begin with. And you can see that in that same story I directed you to, the man in Chicago. He lists those 6 steps as well, just 6 steps. So step eight and step nine, they're not discussed individually in the big book. They're discussed as joint. Because, of course, if you had a mentor, if you were working with someone in Akron or in New York, someone who had the experience of doing this, they would be able to help you differentiate between the amends that you can make and the amends that you should make. You know, you can make all kinds of amends, but some of them you shouldn't make because they would harm other people. So they would help you go through that and help you work out what amends you should make. But Bill, I think brilliantly, decided that there had to be a distinction between making a list of all the amends and actually making the ones that you could make and that you should make. So that's why steps 8 and 9 are separated when the 12 steps were written, but they're not separated in the discussion of the steps in the big book. And I just want to go back to that paragraph I read. You mean, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. No burning of your inventory. Because you've got a list of people to whom you have to make amends. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris, the garbage, which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol, any lengths for victory over our compulsive eating. And they then give instructions for making amends. And I used to think it was just a bunch of examples, but I now see that they're very carefully written, although, again, it could use the subheadings that you'll find in that schematic outline that are part of your handouts and can be found on oabigbook.info. The big book divides, there are direct amends, there are living amends, and there are amends you can't make. And the big book divides direct amends into 3 different kinds of amends, and there are no others. I mean, really, it covers everything. There are the amends in which you apologize and accept responsibility for the wrongs you've done. That's the most common. I am sorry for what I have done. I hope to become a different person. God willing, I will not do this again. How I want to make it up to you. Then there are the amends in which that's not good enough. You have to make up in some financial way for the harm you've done. You've stolen, you've broken something, you've done something wrong, and you have to do something more than simply apologize. And then the third kind of amends is when you have done something that goes beyond the individual and in some way has harmed society or has harmed the individual in a more public way. If you have gossiped about someone
and really hurt that person's reputation, it's not enough to apologize to the person. You have to help undo that person's reputation. If you have stolen money, you have not just stolen it from that person, you've broken the law, and you might have to make a public declaration of your guilt. So they discuss those three kinds of amends in the first part of step of the discussion, found on page, the bottom of page 76, or paragraph 1 of page 91 of the Danish edition, going on to page 79, or the end of paragraph 2 on page 93. This is the discussion, those three things. Examples of how to speak to another person. They talk to you about maybe he's done more harm than we've done him. We still go to him. We clean our side of the street, not theirs. That's the first kind of amend where you're apologizing. We never mention what they've done. We only mention what we've done, and we apologize for what we've done. Now remember, before you think about making these amends, there is that other issue. Would making this amends hurt another person, including the person you're making the amends to? Our OA 12 and 12 has a great example. It is, "Hi, Mother. You know, I've hated you for 20 years. I just wanted you to know I love you now." Well, that's not an amends you would make if your mother doesn't know that you've hated her for 20 years. Because it would harm your mother to know that for 20 years she's been living a lie, you know, thinking that you loved her. So you're not necessarily going to make the amends, but you have to imagine being able to make them. And then they promise that you will be gratified with the result. They promise no matter what happens, whether the person kicks you out and pays no attention to you, or whether the person says, "You're right and I did some wrong to you and let's be friends again," whatever it is, you will feel better. I had that experience. I apologized to someone who wouldn't accept my apology. He had been a very important person in my life. Frankly, what I apologized for was relatively minor, and he had done more things to me than I had done to him, and he wouldn't accept the apology. But I walked out of that meeting walking on air. I felt so good. I had unburdened myself of what I had done. I had not mentioned what he had done. I had not tried to persuade him to like me. I had no interest in whether he liked me or not. And I felt, what I realized was, he had lost the opportunity to get back the younger brother that I had been to him in earlier times. He was like an older brother to me. And I felt sorry for him. I didn't feel bad for myself at all. I felt so good. And I continued to treat him with a great deal of love and respect because our paths would cross at various times. And after about 5, maybe 10 years, it came back. Not a close friendship, but he never apologized to me, but he suddenly began to be friendly to me and nice to me and all that. So, you know, I just kept on my side of the street, and it was a wonderful experience. And then the next, about owing money, restitution, is found on page 78, right in the middle, paragraph 3 on page 92 of the Danish edition. And then the criminal offense and the idea of going beyond the person and paying your debt to society, in a sense, the taking responsibility in a more public way, is found on the last paragraph of page 78, or first paragraph of page 93 of the Danish edition. And then on page 79, or paragraph 2 of page 93 of the Danish edition, they say, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask, here's a prayer, that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we're willing, we must not shrink at anything. I mean, this is very serious stuff. You know, the chances are most of us in this room don't have to pay back $200,000 or kroner to, you know, well, or whatever, a million kroner to some insurance company that we've stolen from. But there are people who've done that, and often they say, "I can pay you $25 a month," you know, because that's all they can pay. But there may be debts that you owe, and you make arrangements. And you say, "Here's my situation. I want to make amends. I want to pay it back. I cannot pay back more than this amount, but I want to do it." And you take responsibility. You take it whether or not you if there's no whether or not there's harm to you. But then, on page 79, right in the middle, paragraph 3 on page 93 of the Danish edition, usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. Because remember, now we're in a sense on step 9. Would doing these amends harm anyone else other than you? Doesn't matter if it harms you, because nothing can harm you more than the death that you will experience if you go on compulsively eating. So better to face the music and to be rid of this, of compulsive eating, than whatever consequences might arise from taking responsibility for actions you've done that you know you're responsible for. I mean, you know. And they give examples. And the three examples they give are examples of the same kinds of amends that I just talked about, but with the question as to whether making this amends would harm other people. It's not quite in the same order. That's the only issue I have with it. The first order is a person who owes money to his ex-wife. That's the restitution part. You owe money. You can't just apologize. You have to pay back some money that you owe. But if he paid back all the money he owed, he would starve his current family. So he consults with that family. And he ends up writing a letter to the first wife and says, I cannot pay you all. Send me to jail if you wish. But, you know, I will pay you what I can. So he makes amends without harming anyone. He consults with his family. He gets agreement that he can pay something, that they can handle that. So that's one example. The second example is found on page 80, paragraph 2 of page 94 of the Danish edition, about a man who hurt the reputation of another man by borrowing money from him and then denying that he had borrowed it in a small town. But if he apologized now and took responsibility for it, he might harm his business partner and his family within that small town. And he consults with them, and finally he does do it. He gets up in church and he admits it all, and he makes up for it. So there's another example where if you might harm someone else, you must consult with them. Because if they say to you, you have no right to do this, you have no right to bring this upon us, you have to take that into account. That won't always happen, but it's something to think about. I've had situations where, you know, I have an ex-girlfriend to whom I would want to say, and my amends to her would be, I am sorry that it must be, I don't even know how long it is, I'm sorry that over 40 years ago I did not end the relationship at that particular moment and tell you that I would no longer have a relationship with you unless you went into psychiatric treatment. In which case I would have supported you. And what I did, in fact, was allow you to emotionally push me around, which harmed you. And I'm very sorry that I didn't stand up and say that this had to stop. Now, that's an amends I'll never make. What kind of a silly... how would I say to a person 40, 50 years later, you know, and say, and look at you now, you know, it's still the same, you know. But that's the amends I owe. I've had friends and sponsees who have been, physically abused by their ex-husbands. And that is the amends they owe their ex-husband. I should have gone to the police right away. And should they go to see this person? The answer is no. It might harm that person. That person might end up beating them up again. And that would not just harm my sponsee, but it would also harm the person who does it. Remember, because we have the spiritual principle that if you harm others, you harm yourself. So that there's another example. And then so that's the example of taking public responsibility. And then the third example they give is the example of a direct amends. A man is having an affair. Does he tell his wife? He ends it, of course. But does he tell his wife? And the answer is, if she doesn't know about it, probably not. Because why hurt her more by telling her about it? Just stop doing it. And they say, we aren't going to judge this. Maybe you should tell her, maybe you shouldn't. But generally speaking, you probably shouldn't. Because what she doesn't know might be better than knowing it. But if she does know about it and wants details, you don't give the details because that might harm the person you've been having an affair with. It might create even worse effects. So this is the discussion. I'm not saying it's necessarily right, but it's a discussion of what to take into account. So those are the three kinds of amends and the discussion of whether making such amends would injure other people. And then they talk about living amends. Right at the bottom of, at page 82, right in the middle, or paragraph 1 of page 96 of the Danish edition, they talk about living amends. It's not enough for people you live with and for people you work with to apologize for what you've been. You have to become a different person. You have to live the life according to these new principles that you've developed. You have to live your life according to the God of your understanding, according to the higher power. Because you have harmed people in ways that no apology can help. So they say on page 83, paragraph 4 of page 96 of the Danish edition, the spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. So that's living amends. And it's not enough for me to apologize to my wife for having been the selfish oaf I've been. I hope I was, not now. It's a matter of not being selfish anymore and more giving and more loving. And then they talk about, so you can see how it covers every possible amends you can make in this very short space of discussion. And then they say there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. This is on page 83 and paragraph 1 of page 97. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. If that ex-girlfriend ever said to me, you know, I've been thinking about our relationship and I think it was pretty sick, I might say, yeah, you know what, I don't think I contributed to it. But that's it. You know, I mean, so there is a way in which, but because she won't, I can't right the wrong I did to her, and I don't intend to. So they talk about that. Then they say, we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. Now, I don't know what these words mean in your language, and you know, but servile or scraping is obsequious is the word. It's sort of like, oh, you know, I don't know if any of you ever read Charles Dickens, but there's in David Copperfield, there's a character named Uriah Heep who keeps saying, I'm very humble, I'm very humble, when he's not at all, he's very proud. And that's what they're saying, don't be like that. You know, they say, as God's people, we stand on our feet, we don't crawl before anyone. Here's the joke that's going to be really tough to tell. Let's see if you get it. It's a Jewish joke. It's as Jewish as you can get it. And it's actually quite appropriate to talk about now because we just finished Yom Kippur, or Yom Kippur as is pronounced by some, which is the holiest day in all of Judaism. It's a holy day, not a holiday. It's the day of fasting. It's the day of atonement, it's called. It's when you confess your sins and you ask God to forgive you. Very significant day, the day of absolute humility for all Jews, all religious Jews. I don't fast. That's not part of my life. But in a small town in Russia, in what they call the shtetl, there's a small synagogue, very few people in this town, and it's the day of atonement. And the rabbi gets up and he says, God, before you I am nothing. I'm nothing. And he falls on his face onto the floor. Says, I'm nothing, I'm nothing, I'm nothing. Then the richest man in town gets up. Says, God, before you I am nothing. I am nothing. And he falls to the floor and he says, I am nothing, I am nothing, I'm nothing. And then the town beggar gets up. He says, God, before you I am nothing. I am nothing. And he falls on his face. He says, I'm nothing, I'm nothing, I'm nothing. And the rich man whispers to the rabbi, look who thinks he's nothing. Okay. For those of you who didn't get it, it is that the rich man is so proud of being nothing that he doesn't think the town beggar deserves to be. He is a nothing, you know. So the rich man is not really a nothing. So that's, I mean, it's a hard joke to tell in another language, but I'm glad some of you got it anyway. But that's not how we should be, neither proud nor humiliated, just humble. We're all the same. And all of us have made mistakes in our time. At least we have accepted responsibility for them. Now, the big book makes promises, right? Halfway through, the promises that were read at the meetings, that you read at your meetings, and I'm not going to read them all, because we've heard them read a lot, but they're the ones found on page 83 of the big book and page 97 of paragraph 2 of the Danish edition. Oh, before I do that, any mention of making amends to yourself? I don't see it. Nowhere in the big book does it say that. The rule is we must be hard on ourselves and consider of others. It's all outer amends. It's for wrongs we've done to others. And I know that many people in OA will say the first amends I owe is... By the way, I found out only recently, me with my MA in English, that amends is a singular word. I always thought amend is the singular and amends is the was the plural, but I'm wrong. Amends is a singular. I hate it. It doesn't come on my tongue easily, but that's why I use the word amends as a singular. Anyway, I know a lot of people say the first person I have to make amends to is myself. And in a way, there are many people who have been people pleasers all their lives and have been pushed around and have never had time for themselves and have always done things for other people. And what they mean when they say, first person I have to make amends to myself, when they say that is, really, I have to start saying no. I have to start, you know, being my own person. And that's true. But let me rephrase it and say, if people who do you harm are doing harm to themselves, people who use you are hurting themselves. And to help them, you must say no in order to allow them the responsibility of doing things themselves and not to rely on other people to do things for them. You do need time to yourself, and you might need time for bubble baths and incense and candles and, you know, if you have baths, and you might have that time. But not for yourself, but so you can regenerate and rejuvenate yourself to help others. If you look at it in that light, you don't make amends to yourself. You make amends to other people by saying, I need this time for myself in order to regenerate myself and to get more energy. I need to say no to you because you can do this yourself and I shouldn't be doing it for you. Because I don't want to harm you by becoming dependent upon me. So rephrasing it and redirecting why you're doing it, it seems to me as of some value because it always points outward rather than inward. And the big book is all about outward, helping others, not helping yourself. You give of yourself. You know, I'll be reading at the end the last paragraphs of the text of the big book. And it says, you know, we will surely meet you as we trudge the road of happy destiny. I don't know what it's like in the languages of your books, but trudge in English means to walk with a weary step. To walk tiredly, to walk as if you've been walking a long time. And that is our role in life. We cannot afford to be idle. We must always think of other people. Because, you know, I've heard someone say, I don't venture into my mind alone. It's a very dangerous place for me to be. And we always have to help others. Other people have the luxury to do nothing.
What does idle mean?
Idle means not moving. Yes, not moving or doing anything. And we don't have the luxury of being able to lie around and enjoy ourselves, sadly. You know, we find out that we have a much more enjoyable life helping others anyway, but we don't have that luxury. If we do, we'll go back to eating. We'll spend more time thinking about ourselves than about others. We'll become selfish in the normal dictionary definition. So there's nothing about making amends to others in the big book. Now, we've got these promises. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. Halfway through making amends. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. That's a great promise. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. And I would just want to go a couple of sentences further. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. For many people, these two promises taken together are the most powerful part of these promises. If our job is to be of maximum usefulness to others, it means that we are able now to take our experiences, however awful they've been in our lives, and use them to help other people recover from the illness that we have. As I've said to you, I have not suffered a great deal in my life. I've led a pretty blessed and privileged life. I've suffered indignities and I've suffered sadnesses and deaths and there are sad things in my life. But I have never been beaten. I've never been sexually assaulted. Although I've been betrayed, never to the point that some people I know in this program have been betrayed. But the people I know who have, in fact, recovered and have had experiences far deeper and more powerful than mine can carry the message to people that, I simply cannot. I'm articulate. I know how to tell a story. I know how to, make a speech and stuff. But these people can speak from their heart, and they can say, I was raped when I was 10 years old, and I don't eat over it. And that's good enough to shut up most whining, because that just says, fine. I mean, they can say that. I can't say that. But they certainly can. And that just focuses people on working the steps for their recovery. The power of being able to do that, and the power of being able to share, because so many people come into the program broken. And the power to be able to say, I was broken too. I had this happen to me. I've seen it happen. I've seen people take their horrible, horrible experiences, and they sponsor someone else, and they walk out of that sponsoring just so happy that it happened to them. Of course not happy that it happened to them, but happy that at least they could transform what happened to them into something that helps another person save a life. And that's the promise here. We will not wish to regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. We are different people now. Remember the story about that man took 4 days out of my life, and I'm damned if he's going to take any more? That concept of being able to say, that has happened to me, I can now use it to help others. A friend of mine in the program, I told you about it, she had a hateful mother, hated her all her life. She worked the steps, she was able to forgive her mother, she was able to deal with all these issues, and her mother was on her deathbed in the hospital. And as her mother was dying, not the same moment, but within a day, her mother motioned to her to come forward. She came forward, and mother sort of pulled her down so that she could whisper into her ear. You know what mother said to her? I hate you. And my friend was able to tell that story in a way that helped so many other people, because she transformed it. I mean, to have such a hateful mother and to be able to talk about that and help others with it, she didn't regret her past, because her past gave her an ability to help people that was far beyond the ability of most. So those are promises that are really significant, and the ability to be reborn that this program gives us, and to take whatever bad things have happened to us and to create them. Is there anything wrong?
No.
Okay.
I think people need a break.
Yeah, I'm almost ready to break. Wait. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to finish step 9 and then I'll break, okay? I was planning for 10:30. I hope that's okay. That is an extremely powerful thing. So, step 9 is the halfway through we get those promises. All the way through, we get promises that occur that are written at the bottom of page 84. I want to finish this section with those promises. Bottom of page 84, or paragraph 1 of page 98. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, even our trigger foods. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor, to our killer foods, has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn off. Instead, the problem's been removed. It doesn't exist for us. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. I mean, that's why I came to this program. I didn't come to feel the word, to know the word serenity. I didn't come to have my experience help others. I came because I couldn't stop eating, and I was in a horrible, horrible space where I was gaining weight and losing the love of my family and losing my love and passion for life, because I was more interested in eating and I was caught in this, and I wanted to be free of that. But these are called, sadly, the hidden promises. Why are they hidden? This is what we should be promising to people when they come to our program. Because this is what happens. Guaranteed at the end of step 9, this is how you will feel. So I'll end on that, and then I'm going to sort through all the Ask It Basket stuff and try and answer some questions. If anyone has any more Ask It Basket, I'll take them, but I'm running out of time, and I won't take any more after this break. So let's break and come back and as soon as we can. I'm really running late, and I've got so much information to give you.